Nice. So very welcome, Rahim. You are one of the few remaining real Austrian economists from the Austrian School of Economics. You are like the brain behind Scholarium in Vienna. You're a philosopher, physicist. I think you're also lecturing in different universities. I think Liechtenstein and Vienna, I know about that. You're a best-selling author. What else are you? A Bitcoiner. You're very active in the space. What else? I forgot at least 10 different things. Very welcome, Rahim.
Thank you very much. Hi, Alex.
Awesome. Tell me, what exactly are you working on right now? Because I know that you are not only involved in Bitcoin and all these libertarian fields, but you are also interested in education. And maybe we can talk a bit about what you're working on, because I think that's the future.
That's right. Yeah, I've been involved in promoting unschooling, homeschooling alternative education for quite a while. Until I realized that it has become much more difficult in the few remaining places that allowed you that option, like France and Austria, my home country. I have left Austria since. I'm now, for the moment, resident in Switzerland. But given the quite difficult and uncertain times, I started a project with a few collaborators and expanded what I had started with Scholarium. Scholarium is mostly focused on education for adults. We had a program for young people age 16, 17 starting, which had to stop due to the pandemic because it was quite physical activities, of course. Now I want to figure out how to solve a problem that I have, that many people have, is that when you seek better option for your children, a lot of places have quite tight regulations and ideas how you should do that. And it changes rapidly over time. So we can be surprised any year about a new change, and now a new emergency, a new regulation to follow. So a lot of people I know and have worked with and taught over the years have chosen a quite nomadic lifestyle. They are, of course, seeking location-independent work and trying to get independent from political locations. And interestingly, that's, of course, something that's closely related to Bitcoin as a location-independent money. The book that inspired many early Bitcoiners was The Sovereign Individual, and was also the book that more or less presented to the world that then relatively new idea of becoming a perpetual traveler or a perpetual tourist, in figuring out that many places, it's very paradoxical and crazy, but many places treat tourists better than they treat their own citizens. It's like they want to tell you how to live your life as a citizen. But of course, they had a lot of places depend on tourist income. So you get away with more and have more service orientation usually. But being a perpetual traveler is terribly difficult once you have children and a family. For a while, it's great. I love traveling with kids. But either it's the kids demanding some stability or looking for a social network of friends, or it's the whole logistics of you got to work, earn money, and still provide for your family. Travel logistics can just be very time consuming, and figuring out everything anew at each place. So what I think we are going forward to is more of an option of a network of locations where I think these kind of more nomadic lifestyles will increase, or more and more people will seek that option. For now, it still allows for the least of regulation and taxes possible in our world. If you have a good passport, as most Europeans have, then you can take advantage of that increased mobility, also through technology, of course. Also thanks to Bitcoin, of course, that you're much less dependent on locations than you used to be. But there are challenges with that, having a few bases, and that's, to cut it short a bit, that triggered my interest in providing a solution, coming up with a solution Scholarium is now engaged in setting up bases for Bitcoiner families, I'd say. I'm not dogmatic about the Bitcoiner part, it's just a filter for a right value set. So usually families that are location independent, that are aware that there are a lot of issues with sedentary, typical education, class-based, school-based education, and it's getting worse every day. Have a more or less a few values that are aligned. I found out that you can't commit to one jurisdiction. So there's no utopia on the planet. You can't say, oh, everything is perfect at that place. Not even at the least in Switzerland, even though it's a very comfortable, expensive location. lots of Swiss are considering leaving Switzerland, of course, as well, and seeking more liberty elsewhere. So I think we are in a phase of uncertainty. So you have to hedge your bets more or less and follow a portfolio approach as in investing. So it's about increasing options, making use of different flags, different locations, different projects, and then being ready to cut off some parts where you realize, oh my God, this has changed so much in the last few years. And then not be too dogmatic about the place you're living at, but still looking for a kind of stability, which is relations to other families. And that's where it's critical to have little scale. So what I want to do is provide space for 25 families, just an arbitrary number, but something that should be feasible and should have enough kids, like 50 to 100 kids, let's say, for which you can provide some kind of a program and some kind of sufficient amount of friendships and playmates and activities, of course, cultural sports activities and also educational activities, but in a very broad sense of figuring out things, learning things together with other kids, not being like concentrated with your same age group in one classroom, the chat, and I don't think is a good idea. But I think it's a great idea to have other kids around and learn from other kids and learn with other kids. And so it's kind of setting up small villages in a way, but figuring out what kind of services and logistics you have to provide to make it workable for parents, to make it affordable for parents. So I still a lot of things to figure out. We started construction at the first location, or committing to a second location, scouting for a third and fourth location. It's a few years now. It takes a lot of time to build something in the real world. Our frame shifted a bit that we are now seeking at least for the third or fourth location, a location outside of Europe. Things have gotten worse, unfortunately, in Europe. We still want to be close and have bases close to Europe because many families will have families in Europe and friends in Europe. So originally, most locations should have been easily reached or easily reachable. And the first location is quite reachable in Europe, and that's what we're looking for. So we are not committing to deserted places somewhere far from everything, but something where it's nice and private and in nature, but still you can have connections if you need that for your professional work. And we are quite realistic, of course. The biggest issue for most families is you need to have a location-independent income or wealth to be able to afford to not live where your job is based at. And that restricts it quite a few people. Of course, that's kind of a condition, but also on the side of like having enough scale and then the idea that potentially families could go in cohorts so you don't have to need to have three places empty while you stay at one. And then, of course, you can have some short-term rental income as well to make it more and more affordable for families so that it's reachable. So it won't be for everyone, but I think it's a great option and I'm passionate about building that.
It's pretty cool. Sorry. What is the plan? Maybe I skipped that. Is it about living flag theory lifestyle? So the families can hop from one location to the other to avoid legal schooling or like state schooling in some sense?
Yes. I mean, we don't want to tell people how to live their lives. Mm-hmm. It's just an option. So one option that's possible with that model having multiple locations, multiple jurisdictions, is that legally you can always be considered a tourist. You will never spend more than 3 months in one location. And you have proof that you're always a tourist location. They're all officially tourist locations. You're just a frequent customer at those tourist locations. You like to take very long vacations. So I think for a while you should be able to go by with that excuse in many places. And then I think those families could spend, or one possibility that's difficult to get otherwise, is to find agreement with a cohort of 25 other families that are maybe linked to their native language or some preferences about how to raise kids. And then you spend three months in three different locations. You just move 3 times per year, and you have all set up in the place. You always be in the same bungalow if you go there. And then you spend the remaining 3 months of the year to visit your home country. You just don't keep, of course, an apartment there, but you'll be a tourist in your home country to get cultural links, to visit family, grandparents. Of course, we'll always make sure also they have smaller rooms for visiting grandparents and family and friends. That's important. So we try to make an offer that's not cutting ties entirely, but opens up this possibility. So you don't have to do that. So some family may choose to stay in one location because they like it so much, but that's a luxury problem. Then we will, and most locations will be able to expand. But I think that's a new option, one that hasn't been here before. But with a cohort of families, you make use of the multi-flag perpetual tourist strategy, without committing to totally unorganized travel all the time, but you just move 3 times a year and it's all set in place. You open the door and ready to go, and it's not the hassle of really moving everywhere, and you can keep stuff at locations. And you have a level of services and provisions to make that as comfortable as possible.
Pretty cool. But what in case of a crisis? Because my plan was originally the same, like to travel every 3 or 4 months to another country, so I don't have to pay taxes, I don't have to put my kid in school. But then Corona came, and I have been in lockdown in 3 different countries, and it was all horrible. And then I'm going to stay in one country, and since then I'm just sitting here and waiting for the next crisis. Somehow not happening.
Yeah.
It is what it mm-hmm. is. But
yeah.
What if the families can't travel anymore and this is the baseline of their legal like framework?
Mm-hmm. Yes, no one has a crystal ball. We're just the only thing we can make sure is to increase our options for the next emergency. And I think an important part is having a network of people and a network of locations and a network of flags. So, of course, we'll try to make use of any possibility to then help those families and people taking part in the project. And I think it's easier if you have access, because you can use locations, you can even use, sometimes you can use investments to get access to locations. Sometimes it's just a tourist thing. Sometimes you need an invitation letter or help with a visa proceeding. Sometimes you need an educational reason and saying, oh, hey, there's actually a kind of school that I go to. And of course, we're very pragmatic. It's a kind of gray area, but we're not breaking any laws, of course. Let's just say we want to make best use of this multi-flag strategy, which is actually, it's a reaction to this geopolitical uncertainty. It's called the geo-arbitrage. It's like you try to figure out how to best use the diversity on the planet. And this diversity is going to increase. So with our portfolio of locations, we want to make best use and have very different locations, some very accessible, even in a crisis situation, some further off. If there's another kind of crisis, I really want to escape and find refuge somewhere. It's not a utopia, a perfect solution. I think it's one thing, it'll increase for quite a few families their options if they're able and willing to go for that. Of course, there can be situations where it's not worth this, or you say, oh, I could have stayed in my home place anyway because it's bad almost everywhere. But I think, as we've seen with many places, there usually are some loopholes, and the more options you have, the more like-minded people the more professional links you have somewhere, the easier it's to handle this new kind of uncertainty.
I love it, because like 10 years ago, I was pretty sure that my kid wouldn't go to school at all. And I didn't have the strength to do it alone. I mean, in the end, I had to. But I was searching for other people to join me on unschooling, on traveling and these kind of things. But there was nothing else out there. So I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, I discovered a project that is very similar. Alfred, por favor. Pardon. And I found it quite interesting because they have the same structure. Like, I think they have 15 to 20 families always traveling together. And I was wondering, how are they organizing it? It's crazy, but they seem pretty happy and relaxed about it. I was like, I cannot even travel relaxed just with me and my kid. But somehow these people can do it. I think it's beautiful that more and more of these, let's say, options are like on the horizon, because I felt so lonely as a single mom with an unschooled kid. It is incredible. Still, sometimes I feel very lonely, but there are more people now. So it's,
yes.
I feel lonely because I chose to be on a very secluded island. That is my problem now. But anyway, so what is the hardest part? Maybe the craziest thing you discovered or encountered while building your project, your idea, your vision, what really left you like speechless, like, this is how it's going? Something like that? Did something happen that blew your mind?
The fiat world, really, and the connections you need to have to it. It's a real estate project, so it needs financing, fiat financing. And it needs fiat laws to allow for fiat construction. And it's just mind-blowing how crazy it all is. I mean, people telling you in what way the toilet should look like. And so it's really mind-blowing how crazy these ideas are. Unfortunately, you have to face that, but it's part of the service. So, of course, more and more families are looking for that more nomadic lifestyle. Some who have the means are buying locations, houses somewhere, and in different locations even. Now, that's not only costly, so that's an option, of course, that the wealthy always had. So, of course, you just have free empty houses sitting at nice places and you go if you feel like it. But it's not only the financial cost, it's so much this bureaucratic cost, the time and energy goes to waste if you own real estate, if you need to buy real estate in foreign locations, if you need to change something, if you want to build something, that's usually horrible. It's just you got to wait for people with stupid rules and they keep you waiting for no reason and then tell you how you should do it. So I think it's part of the service. I wouldn't want to sell my Bitcoin to buy real estate. It's just so much worse asset class with so many issues. So the only way to make it work is I found a way to use Bitcoin as collateral. Then, of course, you had to face fiat finance, which is terrible. But it's a compromise. If you can use Bitcoin as your collateral, you can have fiat to buy real estate. And then you have some economies of scale if it's a few people doing it together. So I invested some of my money and got other people to invest alongside. So we have means to have multiple projects. And so it should be a bit economies of scale. So then we can have someone on the ground who is leading the project and who handles all the bureaucrats and knows them and knows how to deal with them. And that you can't do if you're on your own, your family. If I would do it for my family and face like bureaucrats in three different jurisdictions, Impossible. Imagine that's impossible. So I now have to do it as part of that project, but I can do the grinding as with any project if you're passionate about. You do that and you see that you'll solve something for lots of people at home, don't have to go through it again.
That's so nice. It's really nice because what I thought, or something someone said to me lately, you're so brave, you fled your country, your home country, to educate your child freely. And I was like, that is true somehow. I didn't see it like that. I saw it like a positive thing. I'm liberating myself and my family from whatever bullshit is going on over there. And then I thought, yeah, some people might find that traumatic to leave their home country all alone, being out there. And it is a lifestyle that is not common. So you have to do your research. You have to have your backbone of lovely people that help you out there. Mm-hmm. And yes. I think what you're creating is decentralized education at its best. And I really love what you said, like the network of families that you're creating. But I mean, I can imagine, but why did you choose Bitcoin or families? What was your reason for that?
Well, I'm a Bitcoiner myself. the people that find the biggest need. I mean, and there's some value alignment. You tend to be a positive contrarian if you're a Bitcoiner. You usually don't go along with everything that's common in society, but you're still positive. So you think there are new options that you can choose yourself, and it's your individual responsibility. And then, of course, you're interested in decentralized options and being a pioneer somewhere. So I think that's a reason why a lot of Bitcoiners also have an interest in alternative education and alternative living and being location independent also plays in. It's just value alignment because that there are two options many people pursue when they are fleeing to educate their children in liberty. And that's some go for world schooling. That's even a term now, and that's a trend. That's great. So some families really say, okay, it's better to just go traveling. And for some, it works out. And for a while, they are really happy. And I totally get that. Usually necessitates some kind of level of wealth or an easy income generator because traveling on your own, it takes a lot of your mental capacity. If you have a business that's going and runs itself more or less and you can spend a few hours a day to just keep it running, that's great. I think you can manage. Sometimes you can manage that. But there are hassles with that. So most families are looking for more continuity, stability, also because the children demand it after a while, saying, why can't we have a normal life or something? It just happens. And not every children are very different. So some really flourish when traveling all the time. And most, I'd say, flourish for a while. But then most children, I think, after a few years, we say, okay, can we go back to a kind of normal, sedentary life? And then people are under pressure who really feel like, okay, I can't stay at that location because my kid is forced to go into a school I don't believe in. And then it's really it can be traumatic as well. Then they just settle at some location far away and they take a bet at a new location. So we've seen German families go to Africa and Latin America and settle somewhere very distant from civilization sometimes. And find their blessing. But then you need to get together with lots of families and basically figure out that sedentary lifestyle without much of a support system. And of course, much less economic opportunities if you haven't figured that out already. So that's I wouldn't be ready to commit to like one location that's very distant, and where I say, okay, I'm sure that we find our utopia there. I think that's hard, and the problem is then it's kind of commune like life. It has a lot of issues. People underestimate the kind of value alignment it needs. So when you start up with families, let's say, okay, let's get together all the families that are looking for an alternative, and then you start discussing how you do that. You'd figure out most of the energy goes there, and figuring out where do we align and what's the trade-off and who brings what, and then things cost money and not everyone has the same budget and so on, and it's an ongoing hassle. So very few community projects survive. It's already a small proportion that only survive the first stage, so they never happen, and then of those that happen, most don't survive for that reason. So that's what we found out also the hard way. It doesn't make sense to start with a set of families. It's better to figure out what's the offer you can make realistically, what's gonna work, and what's the price tag of that, and then have a kind of self-selection by families. You say it's a good that's a good offer for me. And I think by saying that we have Bitcoin of families in mind, it's also kind of self-selection. So we are more confident it'll be a better fit. Of course, if it's a great fit for you and you're not yet a Bitcoiner involved, we'll never shut the gates. So I haven't seen any Bitcoiner who's like shutting the gates to a no-coiner or not yet coiner. Yet it's just a kind of helping with that self-selection.
That's cool. You're going to be shot at the gate if you're a no-coiner. No worries if you're a like shitcoin hodler, then you're getting shot at the gate. So I like it. Tell me, what led you to be so in love with freedom and libertarian principles? What happened? Were you born this way? Because I was, but not everyone. Everyone has their own story. So what happened?
Yeah, I think one thing is standing out a bit. So I had like this immigrant background, but then also being very immersed. I've grown up from age 1.5 in Austria. So I was very close to that culture, yet always a bit distant and had a bit of outsider perspective as well. Could be more critical, but also cherish things that other people would take for granted. I think that's one thing. And then, of course, there's some personality things where I need to stand out a bit in interests and being more focused, reading a lot from a very early age and being a very self-driven learner and being curious about the world. And it was a time before the internet, so one really had to do some work in finding and carrying books. That was the access. And then when the internet opened up for me, it really opened up a new world, as I was already like eager to soak in like text-based knowledge. That was just an amazing door opening when I think that was from age 16 or 17, right? The time when I was one of the earlier people then getting a modem in Austria and accessing the very early internet. And that, of course, helps you. If you stand out a bit, then you realize, okay, you may feel alone at your physical location, but there are many more people that have maybe similar ideas, similar values. I think that it helps and it's reassuring.
Very nice. I like it a lot. You know what? Maybe we can come back to the topic of nomadic lifestyle. It solves a lot of issues that we have in communities. I saw that on the island where I live as well, because I had the feeling like if you put together like 10 families and they're working on one project and the baseline is pretty much the same, it's unschooling. Nevertheless, there are so many nuances of different visions for the everyday lifestyle. It is really hard to combine that. So I was really thinking the same, like if we go back to a little more nomadic lifestyle, even if it's with the same people from time to time, same locations, but the shifting is the important part. I really learned that with my kid, because it gives you also mentally the option to opt out, to have a fresh start over and over again. I don't see why this is bad. My parents always told me you cannot run away from your problems. And you can, first of all, you can, because some problems are located at a specific, let's say country, city, whatever. So you can run away from some of your problems. And what I really think is that we are not meant to stay in one place all the time. Maybe it's a crazy thing, but here on the island, they have problems with incest. Of course they have. They have one huge fiesta per year where everyone meets, also the cows and every being that needs to, mingle around, let's say like that. And the first couple of years, I was like, why are they doing this? Why are they traveling with their cows over the whole island to some other cow to greet them? And then I was like, dude, of course, because they need to mix the genes. And it just makes sense that people travel and mix and have different influences, especially for the kids. I traveled a long time with my kid, and I think he's way more resilient through that than me as a kid. I was really not resilient at all, but he is. And what I see, the difference of kids who traveled a lot, they are so much more independent. They are not so much afraid of what is out there, even if it's just on a small scale. You don't have to go to Asia, Africa, and back and forth. Mm-hmm. Just small steps. I really think this is like flexibility should be the new normality. And maybe this is our only, I forgot the English word completely. Security.
Way out.
our only security or way out to whatever is happening. Because I can see like the totalitarian strings are like closing around us, and it's getting more and more uncomfortable to live just like that. So what do you see? Or I mean, nobody has can really predict the future, but what is your feeling? What might be the biggest fuck up for the next years that we are encountering? I mean, we are pretty safe. We got Bitcoin, but a part of that, what do you see?
Geopolitical tensions, of course, wars, always the most destructive element. And then it's not only through destruction of war, but the mindset changes and people like get used to that kind of top-down organization because they feel threatened. And then it's all this idea, oh, there's no alternative, because if you're not with us, you're against us. And I think we had it was quite artificial sedentary lifestyle for a while. It was the success story of the centralized nation state that's very closely linked to its financial system that it brought up. When these models are not sustainable anymore, due to increasing heterogeneity, it's no longer that you have the controllable homogeneous population that can't move for technological reason because everything is too far, and if you don't have a horse, you're bound to stay at the farm as a servant. So that brings issue, this increased mobility, also our mental mobility due to access to new ideas that has changed a lot. So that's the biggest issue. It's failing systems, then trying either to find something to draw away that attention from the failings or to muster all the last resources. And it's like, oh, now we really need to hang together in that or else. That can be war in the worst case is you're in the war zone, but it's quite a spectrum. And even if you're far away from a war zone, it can be that the war mindset just affects you. Just collectivizing, centralizing decisions, making bad decisions, not having any responsibility for those bad decisions and blaming the victim.
Mm-hmm. I like it a lot. I think decentralization is one of the most important things of the next couple of years, maybe for us, not only money-wise or educational-wise, but also for the mental part. Because I think a lot of people were really stuck in this is how it's working, this is how we do it, and this is how we're going to do it for the rest of our lives and the lives of your grandkids. And I think this is opening up a little bit at the moment, and people are... What was that? Okay, crazy noise. Did you hear that? Like a really high
pitch. Yeah, well, I thought it's your dog.
I don't hope so. Sounded painful. It doesn't matter. Yeah, this decentralized approach to life. I mean, you already do it with your project. And I think on a small scale, this is easy to do. But we still have these fixed states of centralized power in the world. And I think it's not going to happen overnight that we don't have any centralized power anymore. So our like approach to that is be as decentralized as possible. Maybe you can give us your opinion about how decentralization might look like in the future for a lifestyle. What are really like the basic points of a decentralized lifestyle? I mean, it is all connected to, of course, a monetary system, education, and these kind of things. But I think a lot of people are underestimating the power of decentralization.
Yes, but the process may be painful. Mm-hmm. There is always a lot of friction going from one kind of setup to the other, and it'll be the birth pangs of a new order. And it may be that the West will suffer the most, in a sense that we were also the main beneficiary of the kind of order that has been around. So decentralization is a way of like figuring out the new, because you are not sure anymore. You become uncertain. You don't trust the solutions and the institutions that have been set up. So it's a discovery process. That's an idea of the Austrian School of Economics. So decentralization always means a discovery process. So it means diversity. It means people failing. But being able to learn from it, because they failed, because they did something on their own, they took responsibility. And that's how we all learn as a society, by having a bit more diversity, figuring out new ways. And then we'll figure out that many new ways fail and make things worse. But the good thing is that you should be able to opt out, that we as human beings, we are able to learn from our mistakes. Yet it would be the worst to not allow us to make any mistakes, because that usually leads to the worst mistakes possible. So decentralization is learning, is always decentralized education, decentralized learning, lots of individuals and smaller groups that are not exclusively bound, but you have layers. So that's another aspect. You can have different parts of your life, personality attached in different layers to different setups. That's also another kind of decentralization. So you can have some parts that are quite sedentary. Let's say there is a place in the world you always go back to, and you really take an active interest and responsibility in, and become very attached for whatever reasons, spiritual reasons, cultural reasons. That's possible. And then you have other parts of your existence that are very, very fluid, and other parts that are like prototyping, experimental, and you haven't figured out yet what's the right trade-off to take. So let's make it all more differentiated, more layered, and a more individualized learning process, I'd say, than the too big to fail and thus too big to learn structures we have become used to.
Mm-hmm. True. I like it a lot. You're also involved with the Free Private City Foundation, and I really like what they're doing. They're creating freedom spaces all over the world, I would say. Sorry. Maybe we can talk about what you're doing there and what the main idea of this is.
Yeah, the Free Cities idea is to learn from a success story. There are some places in the world that have very dynamic economic growth and attracted lots of great people. And some of these areas are remainders of the last centralized structure, the last world power that was the British Empire. And when it went down, it became more decentralized because it couldn't maintain this centralized authority. It was such a space. Also, the US, of course, was the first offshoot of that kind of decentralization. But then much later on, we had these smaller city-state-like structures, in particular Singapore and the Emirates, which are these days among the richest and most successful places. The thing they did is really realizing if you are a small location, you got to attract good people and you got to open up and even be open about the laws that rule at a place and not become attached so much of your identity to the laws, but become more pragmatic. So the concept first of a special economic zone and then of a special administrative zone emerged, like saying that, okay, we could, in parts of a country, even though it's sovereign, it could have another set of laws because maybe for that region needs particular industrial development. That's the idea of the special economic zone. First, you do away with customs in certain areas, then you change labor regulation and taxation in certain areas just to foster growth. Most special economic zones have not worked out well. Because it's always just politicians granting you privileges if you're within that zone. So you have to take it further away. Those things that worked out is not just having a special economic zone, but a special zone with special laws and laws that you can trust as a foreigner. Someone who is not linked in an identitarian way, you say, okay, we are of the same tribe. Thus, I trust you. And as long as my tribe is strong enough, I'll prevail. But have independent judges based on sound rules of doing business. Usually it's kind of international business practices, international law. And that's what the Emirates really did right. In their special zones, it's not only zero taxes. It's you have usually British-inspired law, but only the commercial part that's really useful. And you have usually retired British judges or something that are not under political pressure, that are not from the prevailing tribes of the area. So that has worked out, that has worked well. And now the idea is how could that be replicated in places that have tried almost everything and haven't gotten any development because investors won't go there and it's just life is miserable and it's a vicious circle. So how do you get out of that? And usually the approach is, oh, we got to reform the country, but that's usually just too big. And countries are very diverse, usually have like cities that are conglomerates and sprawling. And then you have the countryside that sometimes is living like in an age that's 100 years, 200 years ago, mm-hmm. like 200 years change in mentality and lifestyle. If you go a few 100 kilometers in many places on the world, because it's like that. So it doesn't make sense to have one set of rules for everyone and everything. And that's the idea that you should strive for constitutional laws, changes that allow for special economic zones plus that also have legal regimes to experiment with. That's a bit further away in the future than I thought, I have to say, because you depend on politicians. So there are lots of issues with that. Politicians usually are corrupt or easily corrupted. So that's a kind of issue with that. So my perspective now, it's I still believe in that idea. I think it'll take longer than expected, and you can really do it as a kind of business. Let's say we create the next Singapore. It's just such a huge investment, and it needs a kind of leverage effect of how do you start that small? How do you start a place that may become next Singapore small? And I think it only goes bottom up. So I think it's more just this. There's this concept of network state. I don't totally agree with it, but I think the general, and that's the approach of the sovereign individual as well, out of the a group of more mobile people, you will have a kind of competition for those people that bring, if they're able to bring capital with them and resources with them, and sometimes even bringing the right mindsets with them. And there we see an increased competition between jurisdictions, parts of jurisdictions, special economic zones, and that's good in itself. I'm not so sure it's already a kind of business case, So I think you shouldn't expect to have a utopia emerging on you in the next few years and say, oh, finally they figured out the free city or the city that brings freedom for everyone who goes there. That's a nice vision. But I think we'll see increased options, and a lot of the new options will fail, as with any project. But eventually, we really have a chance of new cities emerging. And it's a really bad sign that for a long time, a really big new city has emerged. I don't love city life myself, but I love cities for the network effects they bring. Even if I dislike the kind of lifestyle that's attached to Dubai, I really love Dubai for the people it brings together. It's just one of the most amazing places in terms of the mindset of the people and what kind of people you meet there. So they really figured out something, and it's like the worst possible place you could imagine. If that place manages, yes, it, like in the desert, ruled by desert tribes that have very ancient mindsets that are usually not that open to development, figure out, okay, that's the only way to survive and have a good life, is to experiment and have that kind of success story. Yeah, I hope we'll see many more Dubais and Singapores, but at the same time also see the more pristine village style decentralized settlements, I think, that go with it. And maybe sometime in the future the network effects could not need a huge physical urbanized dense structure. I mean, many people have been predicting that it has never worked out, so we still see it's usually you need the density for business interactions or whatever it is. It's really hard to say why it hasn't worked out that well. It may work out. It may be that we're not there yet. It may be with the most recent innovations in large language models, and then like figuring out how to get it to industrial construction, the industry 4.0 kind of idea. How do you steer distance from the distance, physical work as well? It may be that sometime in the next decades that importance of urban density goes down, so that also of course would allow a much more nomadic lifestyle, a flexible lifestyle, but for now network effects are underrated, not only money but also in life, and that has been a counter tendency to decentralization, because of course these urban centers tend to be big, and then sometimes they can be the capital of a national country, and that's really the worst thing that has happened in the past, is the link between the centralized state, centralized industry, and centralized finance all in the same place. But you have to be there if you want to be cutting edge, if you want to start a new industry, get funding, be a pioneer in technology. Usually you had to seek out these places. And that's great. It's great that we had these places. Cities provided a lot of liberty and innovation and wealth, and I hope they continue to do so. Lots of cities are dysfunctional these days, so I think we could do much better with that. And maybe that's a kind of decentralized layered city there, where not everything has to have the same rules. And usually it's a really bad idea to have the same rules for the countryside and the city itself. So, and that's not how it used to be in the past. In the past, every city was its special jurisdiction. And I think we have to rediscover this old experience. And it was very artificial, this kind of nation state led by one big city that gave the language to everyone else and made all the dialects disappear and homogenized everything. So I think we're going for more decentralization, diversity, even in city building, managing, developing. And that's, I think, the essence of the free city idea.
Mm-hmm. Very, very nice. Maybe we can talk about the separation of money and state, because I was always pretty much about Bitcoin doesn't need any politics or politicians. And then we saw Trump being all about Bitcoin, and now everyone's like, oh my God, Trump loves Bitcoin. And I know that you are also involved in Bitcoin. I think it was you. Maybe it was, if I'm not right, please let me know. Bitcoin in Bundestag, this is you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Nice. Bitcoin in the parliament, something, it's in Germany, isn't it? Yeah, it's the German mm-hmm. parliament.
Yeah.
So you're actively bringing the message to, let's say, politics, politicians. Can you maybe elaborate, what is your idea behind that? Because so many Bitcoiners are like, we need separation of money and state. But so many Bitcoiners are also at the same time like, we need to explain to them, we need Nayib Bukele on our boat, we need mm-hmm. him and that. I think Bitcoin doesn't need anything or anyone, but it fucking helps maybe. Now mm-hmm. you're going to tell me why.
No, the only thing about politics is the immense allocation of attention that we give to it. That's unfortunate. But me speaking in the German parliament got so much more attention than me speaking at a private venue. Mm. Even though it's not that important speaking to politicians. It's a nice symptom if finally even some politicians open up because they say, okay, it's something, it's a thing. Some people, some constituencies care about it. Maybe we should learn about it and figure out if we can benefit of it. So that's Trump endorsing Bitcoin is a good sign in the sense that he's, of course, a cynical, a pragmatic politician as any other politician. He thinks that it may be a constituency that's important, that's relevant, and that's a good sign for Bitcoin adoption. It's a bad sign for our human nature that we always attach so much importance to this kind of game, mm-hmm. kind of rigged game. Politics is the last thing to change. It's always just a symptom. When people have changed, then the politicians will finally, of course, change and say, oh, all those people are now Bitcoiners. Why? How do I get their vote? But I don't think it makes sense to address politicians just because you think now you are like the elite influencing the next decision and the decision makers. No, that's like overrating the importance of politicians. They are usually not leaders. They are followers of what they think is public opinion and what they can get away with if they're even of the worst kind, which sometimes in a sense is a better kind. It's better to have corrupt politicians than ideological zealots who really like think that they are the savior and have this kind of complex, so that they tend to be worse. But generally, I don't like politics. I think politics is divisive. I prefer much more cooperation, economic cooperation, voluntary cooperation, because that brings people together. Politics tends to be divisive, and I don't like that. I don't need that. I usually don't talk about politics to people I meet in real life, and I'm not seeking that kind of division. I mean, anything is much more interesting. I mean, what have you experienced? What have you learned? What are your issues, your problems? That's much more interesting than the kind of projection we do and the kind of wars we wage on the big scene. It's like, I'm with them and you're with them. And who's going to win? At least, I mean, with soccer and so on, it's a substitute war and it's positive. But with politics, it's unfortunately, it's usually distraction. But sometimes really it turns into active war and division. And it's not just a game to watch on TV. It's mainly a game to watch on TV. It gets a lot of attention. That's why all the media go for politics. That's how you draw attention. That's why they love Trump. And mm-hmm. they've made him great, even though they think he's the devil and are actively like writing against him. They are making him great, of course, because they need the kind of attention. It's best to shut that part of the world out and get your entertainment elsewhere.
True.
But sometimes they won't leave you alone and take themselves so seriously, and everyone does, and then it's not entertaining anymore. So it's only funny until someone gets hurt. Unfortunately, we can ignore politics, but politics sometimes doesn't ignore us.
It is what it is. I think energy flows where attention goes is quite nice, because some people are like, they really think it changes the life who they're voting for, and this is the stage you are seeing. It's all like a scripted thing you are just part of seeing, maybe. But anyway, so maybe some thoughts before we end our conversation, how can Bitcoin families reach you if they are interested in what you are doing? Or is it invite only?
Yeah, for now it's invite only, but I can share a site which is called moving.school, where you, if you're interested, you can fill out a little form. It's just, we're taking in preferences, just figure out for families for whom potentially that could be a fit, what are their preferences, and to help us along. So that's, I'd invite for, and you can there, of course, should be asked to enter your email address. And if there's a fit, there'll be an invitation to join. We originally thought it'll be just, it's an offer where we, it's like, okay, that's the kind of monthly amount of money you have to expect to pay, and that's what's included in the package kind of thing, because it's just a simple transaction, and then it's always better to just offer something and be completely free to either opt out or take it for a while. Now we're seeing a few families really want to co-own or be part of it, and we try to figure out what's the best way. Originally it was really just a private project of a few Bitcoiners to like something they want to see privately get figured out. So it's not really a profit driven venture, and it's all self-funded, a kind of thing, a kind of fund of friends. We may open it up a bit more to Bitcoiners who really see a match and want to take part in that. Also I invite just to reach out if anyone has ideas or sees synergies, then just reach out. Yeah, my usual website location is scholarium.at. I'm sometimes a bit more active on x.com, Twitter, but I'm not usually in the average, not that active in social media.
Nice. I will put all the links in the podcast description, of course. So maybe one last question for you. You're already doing so many different things, but what are the next big goals you have for the next couple of months or years even?
As crazy as it may sound, I have never been really goal-driven in the sense that I appreciate uncertainty so much, is that I really try to do what I can do best at the moment, and it brings always something new. And of course, you have some urgent issues that need your attention, but mostly it's learning. It's figuring out, okay, how can I get something? How can I make something better compared to what is there? And of course, in a sense, it's the goal to be able to continue that and continue to learn and figure out how to make that happen, or make things happen, make things work out. But I don't know where I'll be in 5 years from now and what the challenges will be. I hope that I find more alignment with other people and may there build an option which may reach some more people. I never wanted to reach lots of people, but just kind of a little critical mess there for something really be a potential change, because you could learn from it and be like other projects be inspired by it. But really I'm looking into very long-term things. It's kind of a legacy thing, how what I like the world to look like that my children grow up in, and what would it be in like 50 years from now, when the next generation I finally, or if I live that long, finally say goodbye, and the next generation can carry on, that there's more value there and more options there, and that I think would be a goal. But I can't tell you exactly what it will look like and what the world will look like then.
No, that's beautiful. Love it. Thank you so, so much for all your input. I really enjoyed our talk. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for the kind conversation. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Nice. Okay. Love what you hear? Then please support the Wildlife Unschooling podcast by checking the donation link in the podcast description. And leave me a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and connect with me on social media for updates. And please feel free to drop me a text. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for being part of this incredible journey.
Yeah, but that's... Adios. Adios, muchachos. Nee, ich koche jetzt gleich. Ich höre gleich auf zu arbeiten, dann koche ich.
Bitte. Bitte. Bitte.